always record episode 18, which I guess is 6 plus 6 plus 6, isn't it?
And the earth are dreaming.
Down. We have David and Bill with us, and we are joined today by a trio that goes by the name of Project PsyCube. So that's Violator Hellspawn, also known as Jeremy, Trevor Toko, or Taco if you will, and Frank Zero, who also goes by Cosmic Comics.
Along with a million other names he goes by.
Yeah, exactly. Before we go too off into anything else, I wanted to ask you guys something, because it occurred to me that we have, you know, Violator Hellspawn is literally from hell. And now Frank's Skype name here is as Apocalypse. And I'm looking at a picture of Marvel Comics character Apocalypse, probably my favorite Marvel character, by the way.
Yeah.
So, with that in mind, this is what I saw today. There is, you know, this kind of silly little debate going on over this film that is making fun of Muslims or portraying Muhammad and all this stuff, and you have these clashes. So what I see is this headline that says, Israeli Arab official warns of, quote, Armageddon over anti-Islam film. And then there's a poster here with people protesting saying, this is CBS News. USA, your ridiculous film is something of hatred to Islam. I can't read the whole thing, it's cut off. But so it's a film and Armageddon. Now, today is September 13th. On September 21st is coming out the new Judge Dredd movie, which when I had seen two movie posters together recently is actually somewhat inspired this movie poster Tarot blog, because I saw the Judge Dredd poster that says Judgment is coming.
Is it with Stallone? Just out of curiosity.
I doubt it.
Okay.
So it's a new Judge Dredd. September 21st, Judgment is coming, so I'm thinking Judgment Day. And then there was September 28th, was the poster next to it, was a poster for End of Watch with Jake Gyllenhaal, which, of course, you have that whole Donnie Darko, the world's going to end on such and such time.
Right.
The movie's called End of Watch. I mean, what is a watch? Is a keeper of time. So I just sort of saw these things together, like End of Time and Judgment is coming. I'm not, like, trying to promote the idea of some actual end or anything here. It was funny, because I had seen those posters together just a few weeks ago, and I was like, oh, that's a really interesting correlation, and it's kind of what got me somewhat interested of doing this just movie poster blog. And then seeing today that there's a film that's saying Armageddon, you know, it's like these people protesting a film and then saying Armageddon's coming. I thought that might be an interesting place to sort of start our call today.
Uh-huh.
It's like, well, obviously the world's not going to end and
right.
It's not going to be Judgment Day, but it's like almost in some weird Philip K. Dickian parallel universe or alternate dimension. Like it's always Judgment Day, or it's always the apocalypse, or comes cyclically perhaps and resonates through.
You wonder how many of those kind of authors want to open up to everybody's ideas that at this point in their writing and their research and whatever, they'd rather a Judgment Day, or they feel like just like weird biblical extremists that Revelation Day will finally confirm for everybody else that everything isn't as peachy keen or whatever as it is in their like PKD-esque delusions and mental breakdowns or whatever. But I think that doing more and more of these cyberpunk films from the 90s and the cartoon stuff and the comic stuff, it seems like there was a really set, whether it was a precog or a on purpose set date, or at least like a 10 to 20 year period, where we just, our consciousness had to come to grips with there would be no sun and everything would be completely screwed up and everybody's running around with like knives and pistols and trying to find their last bit of food, and the ozone layer is messed up, and there's like three corporations and they just drive around with their own militaries and police everything. And I really think it's something to do with either how bad we've come to think it's going to end, or what I think it is a little more, somebody trying to repeatedly say this is what's going to happen in these years. And I wouldn't go as far as to say like predictive programming, but it just seemed like all the artists and cyberpunk and everybody else got locked into this future that looked identical.
Well, we didn't have until, you know, it was relatively recently that we actually had the capabilities of destroying ourselves. Like, we can blow the world over, you know, several times, you know, like, we didn't used to be able to have that capacity until, I mean, what has it been, you know? So
you're saying this is like the post-atomic bomb, we're still living with our, this power that we've unleashed.
Yeah, there's a great speech with Martin Luther King called The Drum Major Instinct, where he basically, like, totally acknowledges that in a really intense way, and is just like, look, you know, this is the first time we've ever really been able to do this, you know? And so it's like, it's not a question between violence and nonviolence anymore. It's a question of nonviolence and non-existence, you know? And so things definitely are coming to a head in a very real way. Now, as far as extremists go and what that means, whether or not that will happen or giving it a date is like, that's another issue, you know? But just that we have that ability is something noteworthy.
Oh, to be sure. I mean, yeah, again, just to put up front, is, you know, I don't believe, I wasn't trying to promote the idea that there was some sort of actual judgment day coming or anything like that. And but I do think, of course, yeah, you know, you have not only that our weapons are so powerful that we have these capabilities, but there's also this idea that there are some of these religious fundamentalists. And I'm not talking Islamic here, I'm talking Christian, Jewish, I'm talking about people, wealthy Americans, who are trying to promote this idea of, if we can get these end times prophecies to line up, well, then the Messiah must come back,
because
he's going to come back under these conditions.
Of course, then, and it's no longer a prophecy, you know, or where's the line with, like, free will and you know, determinism, you know? It's,
yeah. You mean forcing the hand of God isn't, you know, the way you're supposed to go? but yeah, you can see where they are very much actively attempting to put these events into motion so that the criteria is there, which I think is really, it's just foolish on so many levels. It's suicidal.
Yeah, I had written some of that back in the day. I deleted all that stuff from my blog, but the whole British Israel movement, where they believe Britain's the real Israel, but they set up the state of Israel, I think it was after World War I, the Brits were already clearing the land for the future state of Israel, basically so that they could have the War of Armageddon in Megiddo and Syria. And, you know, we have all these problems going on there, nuclear powers, Israel's got all the nukes, and they're, you know, with Syria and all the other countries around there, it's like everyone's like kind of sitting back waiting for a nuclear Armageddon to happen.
Well, there definitely is kind of a domino board out there. Like, fucking, you look at one place hates this place, one place hates this place, and it's all like, it's a total mess, you know? So,
I can't help but think that somehow that's made to look like that, in the same way that I'm saying it's not forced, but once you see everybody on the map with nuclear capability, and once you have this 90s and 80s idea inscribed in your head that this is the aftermath, it's more like that planning could, if consciousness creates reality at all, it's more like creating that kind of world stage allows everybody to, you know, just definitely think it's coming. I'm sorry to interrupt you, man.
No, that's not an interruption. I recognize. I don't know. I had at one point somebody in India with a map pointing out to me, like, who was pretty, he was pretty in the know. It was kind of an intense picture that he painted, but he was just showing me who has what against who, you know. But it's not like all the, like, people talk about America and what America is. Yet, like, a lot of Americans don't approve of, like, what the American government does. Like, and it's true in other countries as well. And we get a picture painted of what, you know, people are about across the globe. But really, we're being told what their rulers are about a lot of the time. And and not even all of them, because they're in conflict, too. It's just, you know, it's, yeah, it's a whole thing. So, I don't know.
Going to Frank's point for a moment, this idea of that there was, whether it be predictive programming or just some sort of, like you said, I mean, you know, is this precog or just a, I mean, it could just be a sort of trend, almost like a, you know, it becomes a sort of cliche trend. Like right now we have a million vampire movies. We have like a million vampire movies and a million Snow White movies. So, you know, there come these moments where some idea kind of catches on and it just grabs, you know, it's the zeitgeist, right? That's the concept there. It's like, okay, this is what everyone's sort of wrapping their heads around at the moment.
Yeah.
And probably that, you know, Cold War era, hey, this very real possibility we could all die, living with that and the paranoia and the militarism and the nationalism and all these things that come out of it, it doesn't surprise me that you would have this cyberpunk post-apocalyptic trend. However, I think it is interesting how much of our media, particularly in the 90s, started picking up this religious flavor. So not only do you have the Marvel character Apocalypse is an older character. You know, he's been around since the 70s, but, you know, so you have the X-Men cartoon, which really played up on him and the Four Horsemen. So here you have this Apocalypse and the Four Horsemen all over your Saturday morning TV.
Right.
You have the Spawn comics where Jeremy's taking his, avatar from, which plays up very much into the, Dante's vision of hell, you know, with its nine rings, and then it also, later in the Spawn comics, he starts interacting with angelic forces. So you have this, like, very much angels versus demons, good versus evil concept playing out. And then in 1993, you have the Batman character who gets his back broken by Bane, and then who does he get replaced with? But, Azrael, right? This archangel.
Yeah.
So now if we jump forward, what is this? Almost 20 years. Like 19 years. Here we have a movie just came out with Bane versus Batman, as just this concept has been reintroduced on a much bigger scale on the big screen. I just think it's interesting that we have, like you said, this sort of built-in programming, whether intentional or not, the programming is there to make associations with this good versus evil war, angels and demons. I'm saying angels and demons. There's even that Dan Brown.
And that had a end of the world sort of scenario with the dark matter bomb and CERN, and that kind of weird stuff.
Yeah. So here we are, 2012, right? Is time for people to start shitting their pants?
Hey, I just want to, I'm looking at the Dread poster, and I don't know, like, there's a bunch of things about it. First of all, it's called Dread 3D, right? Which is like Dread the third dimension. Like, either you could say it's like pushing us into another dimension, or we got to like basically recognize, I don't know. But anyways, if you look at the poster, it's this guy who's kind of dressed like, fucking, what's his name, the guy who blew up the theater, you know, he's all in the whole SWAT gear attire, you know, it's like, it's Judge Dredd, but it looks like it's like the head of a pyramid, like he's like stepping towards the head of a pyramid there, and it actually, the buildings in the back kind of remind me of Batman in a way, when they burnt the bat symbol into the building or what, it just kind of reminds me of that, but also
very much looks like that,
the Twin Towers,
that it's like judgment is coming. I was just thinking about in psychology where the death instinct and the pleasure principle are one and the same, and the Darren Brown idea of what that means on a capitalism level, like as far as like what America is doing and what people who are participating in the big game are doing. It's kind of like they're just like trying to get to climax, and it's also their own death. And so these Christians, in a way, are kind of playing the same kind of thing because they're getting off on it. They're getting like an energetic thing out of it. So it's like judgment is coming, like literally, you know.
Yeah.
There's this weird, I don't know, this is probably totally off the wall tangent, but there's this weird phenomenon where people sort of have this really strong anticipation. The closer they get to something, the stronger the anticipation gets, kind of thing. Like if, I don't know, just driving, if someone's getting near their exit, they tend to speed up. Like I've had people fly around me, past me, just to barely exit right in front of me. And if you've ever had like a major poop on the burner and you're like looking for a bathroom, like the closer you get, the more it's like you can't hold it in. I don't know how to describe it, but there's definitely some weird psychological phenomenon where people just kind of push, you know, faster and faster towards the wall, and it's their death.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know, I can't help but think, when I think of, like, the original Judge Dredd, and I don't know if anyone's seen my nearly incoherent work on Judge Dredd and Demolition Man, but, I mean, I found them both the same kind of movie, and then within the movie I see a bunch of sync themes, but then I see like these major fascist kind of points that we're supposed to establish, not about like how terrible things are going to be, how dumb we're going to be, and how terrible it's going to be because we're so dumb we can't find our way out of like these simple super advanced electronic situations or just whatever. But what I saw more than anything was like the beginning scripting of the actual super soldier conspiracies and stuff like that. And I can't help but wonder, when you have these movies that are just exploding with, okay, you got one or two stars, which means when the thing comes out in theaters, a lot of people are just going to go blindly see it. And then you got this narrative that's breaking apart, like real super soldiers say that they were involved in, or their personality types are like, or certain keywords or whatever. And then on top of that, you see this whole, the world's going to end, everybody's going to be screwed and things like that. And what this sounds like to me all together is just a lot of Alex Jones putting science fiction. This is a lot of stuff that feels like it's there to make people think about every possible paranoia. And then they may even become a conspiracy theorist and start reading about the real aspects of the stuff. It bleeds right into the movies. When you go to discuss it with someone who doesn't know about sync or movies or conspiracy theories, it's just completely useless. And so I think it's some kind of psyop to just really majorly confuse the info, like I see in the cartoons. But if you watch Judge Dredd and Demolition Man together, you'll get a good idea of like what someone was trying to tell us, you know, like a lot of those sci-fi movies. It may just be an artist was being creative and getting out what was repressed about his world and wanted to make a utopia where some things are still wrong, yada yada, normal sci-fi writing. But it just, it reeks suspect to me, you know.
Oh, very much. I agree. There's this Alex Jones sort of subculture that seems very much to be a psyop, in my opinion. There's nothing else that I can think of it as. I mean, particularly when you talk about, I think the most obvious thing for me is you take a group of people who say, hey, this is, I mean, they're of course blaming bankers and Zionists and whatever else they want to blame, but
yeah,
for the most part, they're blaming the military-industrial complex. So you're blaming the military-industrial complex, and you're saying the solution is to buy guns. Well, who benefits when you buy guns?
The military-industrial complex and the organizations that may be a lot more nefarious, who then make the money from those different types of better weapons.
Right. And it's like if you know, there was a group of people saying Monsanto is, you know, makes horribly genetically modified food. Everyone go out and buy genetically modified corn. You wouldn't do that.
Right.
So the idea of like, yes, let's feed the problem, just it seems like such an obvious mindfuck.
Well, you see, the thing is, Alan, if you start talking really loud and aggressive, and you're yelling about everything you're saying, and you're like Rush Limbaugh, which everybody's supposed to hate, but you're just liberal, and you go on with this whole thing about buying guns and the whole world's going to blow apart or whatever, you're basically just carrying on the Billy Graham byline or anyone who's like seriously opposed to that. But there's always this religious, or like he's the hero or he's the martyr or whatever for us, kind of thing. And, you know, when in the first couple of months of him existing, he had street teams of kids dressed in all black, which I wouldn't let in my elementary school, running in elementary schools and just like busting open teachers' doors and being like, this information is more important than what's in your textbooks, you know, blah, blah. It's just, it's always been the wrong way to go about it. It's always been really extreme. I don't know if you guys have been keeping up with Knowles' work and some of Examiner, Trevor and I's work or whatever. William Cooper, Alex Jones, all these guys straight across the board seem like they were set up to sell a major conspiracy theory meme, a genre, and then all these other people could benefit off of it. And then, you know, just because of my background, I have to go into alien abduction people and trauma-based mind control people. And when I do, it seems that most of these people have real memories. They are telling the truth, but their memories have been tampered with. Their minds have been tampered with to the point where they're just there selling some of the bylines that maybe Alex Jones or whatever is, you know, nothing with gun control or whatever. But it's kind of a way to control the whole spectrum. You can control this whole southern Bible Belt. As Ted Torbett says, you can pacify every man in the Bible Belt if they just have their home defense pistol, a shotgun or whatever. Now, if they believe in what they believe in, obviously a pistol isn't going to take down a bunch of drones, black helicopters, the entire New World Order, post-Nazi army or whatever. So none of it really makes sense to me. But I do see some eerie characters that should be examined more closely.
Yeah, David Icke. I resonate with the disinformation thing. It's like, because there's so many facts that are all embedded in what they're presenting that it feels like that's like, you know, it discredits all those bits that are actually like, yeah, and usually those bits aren't their own. Like, they're other people, you know, working on something, and then they take that and then they incorporate it into this crazy web that has a lot of disinformation in it. So it's a total turnoff in terms of what's there that actually has substance. So,
but it's put there on purpose, you know. So if you're a normal Kentucky kid and you never believed in anything weird, and then all of a sudden you get abducted one night, and then people start listening to your abduction, well, it sounds like all the other abduction narrative, and the researcher will be as serious as possible. And then all of a sudden, like, Bugs Bunny winds up on the UFO or something. Like, there are, you know, kids who go through this satanic ritual abuse or whatever, you know. They come home trying to explain, like, no, literally, people with Mickey masks and, you know, Batman masks or whatever were hurting me in class. And eventually it just sounds like complete nonsense to, let's say, parents in the Christian right who don't want to touch a thing like that with a 10-foot stick or maybe in on the abuse or whatever. I didn't mean to get into that dark corner, but there's so many ways to confuse the data.
Yeah.
Are Icke and Jones like the pop culture of legitimate sync culture or whatever we want to call it, and that they're just exploiting a phenomenon and a formula? And a lot of the ire that they raise is that they sell out, that they penetrate into a larger stream, almost borderline mainstream.
Yeah, I think they're very much mainstream. And this is something I give Knowles credit for pointing out, is that, you know, all their stuff, it's just news aggregation. You know, they're posting headlines from other news sites. They're not actually journalists. So there is that. They are essentially a mainstream news media, if they are news, and all they are is a spin machine, so they put their spin on it.
Jones has been in The Scanner Darkly and Waking Life.
He
birthed the whole Charlie Sheen thing. Remember the first interview did where he went off the rails and talked about Tiger Blood was on Alex Jones.
That's correct. Right. Yeah.
Well, that and he even had Heidi Montag or Spencer Pratt or whatever their names are on his show, so
they're dead, acting right? Like
them?
Are they dead or where'd they go?
I don't know. Hopefully they do this, but you know. Like fall out. Yeah, and he's like talking about how like I'm so glad that you're speaking out for your generation and exposing them these kinds of ideas and like
Yeah.
My favorite Jones is when he's talking about DMT and he's saying that the people in power are smoking the DMT. I want to sample it where he's like, they're the ones smoking the DMT. Like, fuck.
when he's talking about the machine elves, and then he's like, I don't mean I believe this, I'm saying they believe this. They believe there's machine elves, and they're gonna... It's like, do you even know, have any idea what you're talking about?
Talking about evil munchkins from the dark side of the moon, dude, controlling everything.
But the thing about the Charlie Sheen and Alex Jones, though, that I think is overlooked in all the badness is that Charlie Sheen, I think, had gone on Jimmy Kimmel or some of the late night talk shows and started to mention some of the 9/11 truther shit.
Yeah.
And it was right, almost immediately after that, that he went bonkers. And yeah. Covered up any kind of conversation that he was dangling out there on the mainstream talk show circuit. So I think, I mean, subconsciously, everyone said, oh, Charlie Sheen believes in that conspiracy crap, and then he goes nuts. And then he's on Alex Jones. And then in most people's minds, when they think 9/11 truthers, somewhere in that thought stream is Charlie Sheen, madness, drugs.
Yeah.
So if I may, I had put, this is an actual sink, is... just before the Charlie Sheen thing happened, I put out my book, the Happy Creatures book. And this is page 165. It says, he had to be made to look a fool in the eyes of the public. This was necessary as a way of signaling to the watching world that one would have to be insane in order to oppose the state. Besides, the network could afford to knock the celebrity of one of their performers now that they had a genuine superstar in their hands. But basically, it goes on, but it's saying, here was a celebrity, and they basically tear down this celebrity for trying to say there's something wrong with the government, and that they make him, the solution is just to make him look as crazy as possible. It's not to try and discredit him, it's just to make him look as crazy as possible. And I put this out literally, I don't know, a week or two before the Charlie Sheen thing exploded. Yeah. It hit me in really hard in that respect. But what I think, I'm glad you took it in this direction, is because it's so, what I find is that people are missing the nuance here of, to discredit Alex Jones and David Icke is very easy. I mean, they are the ones who are making this look insane. They're the ones who are making look. In order to believe this, you have to be as crazy as that guy up there shouting, jumping up and down, screaming all this stuff. However, as David said, there is a lot of truth embedded in there. So I find that when people either go, oh, you know, I'm past, I don't, there's no conspiracy anymore. Oh, obviously Alex Jones is a psyop, or he's just crazy. That means there is no conspiracy. Back up. I mean, there is a lot of truth. We are dealing with very real problems. I just don't think Alex Jones or David Icke should ever be the ones to try and tell you what the problems are or how to deal with them.
Well, David Icke, Alex Jones explains that really clearly about himself while talking about David Icke, and I'm going to spare you guys my Alex Jones impression again, but he says that he has all this great information, and then he goes and drops a turd in the punch bowl, and it's the same kind of technique of disinformation where it's some stuff that, you know, we can definitely quantify and factualize, it's some stuff that's up in the air and just the conspiracy literature, and then it's some other data. I can't help but be reminded while you're talking about that, of how David Icke's career, you know, he started in like soccer and then in journalism and then whatever, and then he had this like Grant Morrison kind of experience, and he went on a TV show in England and explained how like God chose him to be this man for all and that whatever, and that was like the end of his career as far as that, and then he started the whole conspiracy thing where he kept the channeling for just the extreme research, and as many people have noted, a lot of his work may be lifted from other people. So you have Icke and Jones going back and forth. Most of the conspiracy theorists, people diss each other to sell their own books and stuff like that. Oddly enough, among the super soldiers and all these other groups, they can't be in the same room together, and there's all this conflict. And I still haven't figured out if it's like a sales tactic or if, like Charlie Sheen, there is a trigger where if you just hand someone enough of the drugs they prefer, they'll go off into the personality, you know, will make them stupid. Any number one of those things.
Vatican assassins.
But yeah, we could go there.
It all is good.
I loved you in Wall Street. I yeah. It's fucked up.
So, Bill, maybe you can clarify what you meant. You said, is this the pop culture of sync culture?
Well, it's just, it's formulaic. It recognizes an exploitable medium that resonates, but it is devoid of the heartfelt intent of the real culture. So pop music is designed to be played in clubs and to climb up the charts and have as many people want to buy it. It's not created with the heartfelt desire to communicate an emotion or to break new ground, or there's no sense of artistry, you know. It's product. So sync product is going to push buttons and raise volumes and make colors louder, and it's going to resemble madness. Very few of us in the sync community, when you talk to them in person or you get them one-on-one, do they strike me as legitimately mad. So the whole selling out notion of any pop culture is to make something real plastic and at the expense of life and living. It's a simulacrum. It's a matrix. It's a mask. So to condemn Alex Jones is to condemn pop culture. You know, it circles right back around to where and why everyone started to feel alienated at a certain point. Because I think it's when you turn in your adolescence and you're starting to see a repetition and a formula and a plastic nature to all the things that they want to sell you, and you reject them, but others around you are gobbling it up or fighting over it or debating about which is better, and then you're forced to find some other source, some other stream of information. And that's why you find yourself reading maybe comic books or listening to bands that no one else listens to or discovering old movies from the 60s and 70s, is that you retreat out of that whirlpool. You know, you don't get trapped in it. And I think that there are very real paranormal and very real psychic events that happen to people. And unfortunately, if they're caught in that mainstream whirlpool, they're going to think that Alex Jones, oh, he's talking about it. Let me go listen to Alex Jones or David Icke or whichever one of these clowns are.
Now, Michael Sarin.
And maybe they will lead you out of their bullshit into something real. Hopefully the power of the event that you experience has situated itself strongly enough to where your radar will attract you to the real things. But most people, without a community of people to talk to, you're just going to buy more Alex Jones books. You're going to buy more David Icke books. You're going to maybe go to a conference or two. And when you go to a conference, you're going to meet some con man who's going to take all your fucking money. It's an old, old game. It's just got a brand new face. So I don't know. It doesn't seem like a cancer of the sync community. It just is the most explicit picture of it that we can see. I think it's kind of like, how do you fold that back into the greater picture from where we kind of came from? So
I think sync is a really healthy, constructive art and or practice. And then I see the plastic culture you're talking about as really solidifying itself among the corporations, realizing just what they could do with it in the 80s and especially with music. And then it's sped up to a point now where musicians completely aren't musicians and everybody's listening to disposable crap. And obviously that's going to lead to like I guess, disposable lifestyles, disposable culture, whatever you want to call that. But I think we have a lot more hope in you know, people who are interested in sync or people who just don't buy all the conspiracy stuff and kind of converting that into something else. And I guess everybody else is just going to have to figure it out. But about, you know, selling commodities and conspiratainment industry and what that's become. And like I'm saying, they go at each other's necks just so after they can sit back and go, okay, how many tips do we have? Oh, maybe we should be more angry at each other the next convention or something like that. I see all that going down for sure.
Oh, yeah, it's like a reality TV show. They're actually told, I mean, I've known a lot of people who were, you know, say, like, I live in New York, so you have a ton of restaurants and just different media outlets. So people try and, you know, approach people with reality show things for different reasons.
Yeah.
So my wife worked for a restaurant where they came in and wanted to do, I don't know, what is that, Hell's Kitchen or something. And, you know, their whole thing was like, oh, no, so how do you feel about your coworkers? And everyone's like, oh, yeah, she's really nice. It's like, no, you can't do that. You know, make up a reason to hate that person. So,
yeah.
All right, you hate her, and then, you know, she wants to fuck him. It's like, well, that's actually... So, whatever. So, yeah, you have this idea of conflict causes ratings, so there is definitely that.
Yeah.
And then, you were talking about disposable last. I just want to throw in, if you remember Demolition Man, what was the whole thing in the future? Everyone listens to jingles, like commercial jingles.
Commercial jingles over and over, yeah, and they sing them aloud, happily. And
yeah, so not only is it disposable, but it's also, like, reinforcing... You know, but it's essentially brainwashing. You know, what are commercials and jingles? I mean, this is a really scary thing going this direction. I mean, if you think about it right now, if I mention a Kit Kat, you could probably think of the Kit Kat song really easily, and it might get stuck in your fucking head.
Break me off a piece of it. I'm fine.
Oh, see, I couldn't think of it. Now it's stuck in my head.
Or, I mean, you know, name a product, and there's probably, this is where we get into, like, there was a gentleman who called it, you know, colonization of the mind, is that ultimately what these marketing companies have done is they own a little piece of your brain.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is going to be, you're going to be 70 years old, and someone's going to say Kit Kat to you, and you're like, it's like, motherfucker, it's in there. It is stuck in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, the question would be, how do you purge that, or how do you live a lifestyle where that's not, you know, obviously if Kit Kat's in, what else is in there? I think is an excellent, you know, question to just sort of throw out there. I don't know that we can answer it, but.
Yeah. Pop songs and movie quotes?
Yeah.
I think what the whole... crazy Alex Jones, David Icke, Michael Cerin, etc. Thing. It's kind of like the ego's own version of Gyan Yoga in a way, because it is yoga. I mean, you're basically yoga of the intellect, where you're connecting dots and you're exercising that faculty, which is an amazing faculty that we have, and what we energetically get out of it is something. But it's like manipulating a drive that we all have, like towards understanding. And you have a sense that you understand, but it's still superficial because you're just seeing how all the egos connect, basically, which is all like a fucking coping mechanism to escape the fear of death, you know? So it's like substitute reality. I mean, it is reality television. But I think that there's the same principle is applied on other levels can actually liberate, yet at this applied on this level kind of imprisons. You know, so
it's the extremism, I think.
Right. So, but it's interesting that it is the same technique that's at play. It's just used in a different direction in a different way. So I think it's like there's like a understanding that we have the capacity to do this and that we've been doing it forever. And it's like the basis of like of pretty much all like religion and mysticism. So we have this drive in us. So why not direct the drive? And it's like this whole thing where it's like, well, if these people really had our best interests, you know, if they didn't have our best interests in mind, why would they be dropping so much information on us that a lot of it is real information? It's like they know that people are pretty smart to begin with. They'll figure things out. So if you give it to them yourself and then steer it how you want, to steer it, and, you know, I mean, yeah.
It's just, there's no excuse for not having, like, half or a quarter of an understanding of Western esotericism and then just to blow out your loud horn for 8 years that the Bohemian Grove is going to be the downfall of all humanity and stuff like that. You know, there's something about that that's supposed to keep you on your bottom chakra, just like music videos are known to, you know? And so it goes back and forth between, kind of like we were saying, like, and Violator's made points to this, between sexual attraction and extreme violence and whatever. And like we were saying a moment before, then our inner language becomes Janet Jackson's boob and the Olympics and 9/11. It doesn't become the symbols that may be necessary for inner transformation or for an outer utopia to arise from us, you know, creating consciousness from our will, or however you want to put that magically.
Right.
Well, is there a common definition for utopia nowadays?
Oh, no, I just have this pretty impossible dream. Yeah.
Utopia is an impossible dream, is the, like, literal definition of the word.
Too many different utopias for everyone.
Yeah.
Everybody has their own idea. Someone's utopia is another person's dystopia.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm trying to think.
I wonder how many people, at the height of its popularity, were simultaneously playing World of Warcraft.
You don't ask that. That goes straight into Call of Duty. You really don't want those stats. That goes straight into Call of Duty, so you have everyone sitting down across the entire world playing a terrible, terrible looking game that's supposed to be the advanced Dungeons & Dragons for video games, and then freaking out over to, like, calling each other terrible names, and it just gets so derogatory before the fantasy is accepted. And then it goes straight into Call of Duty, which is the Tom Clancy sort of Call of Duty plan to make everything a military simulator, and Super Mario and Sonic will never rear their heads out in this world again.
But that's a hell of a lot of people choosing to enter into a virtual reality in real time, whatever that means, and engage socially with their imaginations centered around... Now, honestly, it is ultimately, at its highest form, it is... All games become chess games. I mean, it's just, that's just what it is. Everything becomes a chess game. So it can transcend itself past the blood and guts and the gore and the cries of faggot and homo and asshole. But but I wonder how many people really transcend that gap. Does it create more chessmen, or does it just expose more idiots and morons? It's a fascinating concept for a utopia, because it's all choice. I mean, you're not thrust into those worlds. You choose to go in those worlds. And people get addicted to those worlds.
Did you ever see the movie about World of Warcraft players? I think it's called Second Life, but even though it has nothing to do with the online game Second Life. It was like... I mean, you'd see a house, and there'd be three people living in the living room, all, like, waking up out of their sleeping bags and hopping onto World of Warcraft, and there's, like, people who, like, met and got married on World of Warcraft and in real life, and then got divorced later, and it just followed, like, all these groups of people, and it was, like, literally their life was World of Warcraft.
Yeah, and I call it, you know, these teams of people, like, actually meet in real life and play all day and whatever, and I mean, they're literally like a family, and they have to get on this 14-hour span every day to hang with their family and collect headshots. Yeah. It's a weird culture. But that's why I have, if anybody doesn't know, I'll self-advertise for a second, but that's why I have the Illuminated Gaming Group, so we can try to go back and find these games that were a little more prolific or had good ideas in them, try to make them shine a little more than, you know, just military simulators that are obviously for the purpose of military simulators.
Like the free games the military gives out? They gave it out before.
Blackwater Wii game, and the military has already funded about 5 in the past 2 systems. So you don't even have to go to them and try their simulators. This shit is right there at Toys R Us.
You can download free ones.
They'll actually charge you for it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like, what I noticed years ago was, like, in our weird corporatist empire, it's like, you know, if this was a communist empire, then they would provide all the, you know, state is going to mandate that you actually have to buy the military simulator, or you, or they'll provide it for you. In a corporate empire, they're actually going to find a way to charge you for it, and you're going to be excited to have it. You know, it's right. Much more Brave New World than that. You know, it's you gotta line up inside the store to get it, and you're going to pay for it. But yeah, when you see things like with all the military drones, you know, these remote controlled drones, it seems very obvious to me where military simulation just leads. It leads to actual deaths.
Well, I mean, I was training with drones from literally 1995, and every single video game, I really had no idea. Even the James Bonds are starting to include it. And then, you know, in the last couple of years, oh, drones were created, and now they're just remote controlling bombing people and whatever. And it really fits together in my head. Like, if I was just some jarhead, and I put the games down and decided that I needed to go kill people before I came back and found girls or whatever weird process caught in my head, that might confuse things a little.
Does anyone remember, like, one of the very first Apple home computers had a game on it where it was, like, a plane, and then you this guy out of a plane to land on this, like, there's, like, at the bottom of the screen is this cart being, it's like a, what do you call it, like a hay wagon type thing, it's like a wagon full of hay being pulled by, like, a mule, and there's, like, a plane going across the top, and you have to drop a guy out of the plane, and he has to land in the
park
with the hay.
I have a vague recollection of playing that at my grandparents' house on their old fucking Apple. Totally. That's weird.
Yeah, I played it at my uncle's house, who had one of those. And it's like, and I'm just thinking, like, from the earliest, as soon as we have these computers in the home, we're doing missile command and missile command and piloting drones.
Which, when I went out to see you guys in Idaho, when I went to my parents' house, first I grabbed my Atari, and with that was Missile Command, and I've been playing it, and I was like, wow, this is like, they're really on it with the weird ass, getting people excited, and basically putting a wall between you and an actuality, and giving a representation there, which is totally removed, and getting you into it at the same time. It's like total programming for real, you know? The fucking Atari.
And this game is coming out.
But what's funny is that Atari itself is named after basically the equivalent of check in the Chinese game of Go, right? So, which is when you're basically making a territory for yourself, which is literally called an eye, and you're establishing your area on a Go board, that's actually, you say Atari, like, right before you're about to close the circle. So, in a weird way, it's like, that is military, it's a military thing to say Atari in the first place. You guys know what I'm talking about? Go with the black and white.
Yeah. I'm thinking it's
a beautiful mind.
It's a claim of, it's exactly that. It's colonizing your brain. It's like saying, okay, this territory is ours. It's a claim of territory.
Yeah.
It's the same reason why I don't, like, whenever, it's funny, like, whenever people talk about the whole moon landing thing, for the most part, I think it's a moot debate, because whether we went or not, it's both the same political result. You either didn't go and you just wanted to beat the Russians and say, ah, the Americans made it first, or you did go, and what is the most obvious outward result of you doing that? Is that you put an American flag on the moon. You know, it's like saying, mine...
It's
since the dawn of man has dreamed of touching the moon, and we finally make that dream come true, and how do we, you know, celebrate it by being a seagull and finding Nemo?
Right. Yeah. We had a friend over last night, and who's basically been in Vietnam for a year, and he ended up with this Russian woman. This Russian woman was here last night, and we were discussing this whole, like, her... what happens for people, like, in relationship to Russia, like, still, like, you talk about Russia, it's like the Ruskies, like the Reds, like the whole energetic of it. And she doesn't speak much English necessarily, but it was really kind of a trip. And I was telling her about how Dr. Strangelove subtextually is all about basically America trying to get it on with Russia, and dropping the bomb is actually its climax. And it was funny because my friend's American, you know, and he ended up with this Russian woman. I was saying, it's like, you know, and when she got it, it was really funny. She was getting what I was saying, you know. It's like Mother Russia, and then they're finally like, okay, we got it. But I mean, the moon itself, like the rocket that we built, is the most fucking phallic thing ever.
Yeah, that's
like,
what the if you watch the features of Dr. Strangelove, the art director says basically everything humans make are like penises and vaginas, and that whole opening scene of the airplane refueling was, you know, a sex act.
Totally.
In that movie.
Yeah, and then, I mean, it's Project Paperclip in the first place, right? Like, those are Nazi scientists at, you know, JPL who are building those in the first place, and it's like, did they not know that this is going to be used for missile technology? Is that just like a happy accident? Like, I don't know. Like, it seems pretty straightforward, you know.
Where is there any religious prophecy or any text that points to any to the Russians being the first in space and Americans being the first on the moon? Like, no one, none of the big three get to use that as their own, right? Like, no one can claim that their religion knew this was going to happen or that this was part of their whole universal construct. It's a complete outlier because it goes against everything that the big three teaches, I'm assuming.
It reminds me of this, I don't have the real answer. It reminds me of this comic I was reading like 20 minutes ago where this is like a 50s or 60s weird fantasy comic where this guy tries to go in space. I forget what happens, but he winds up talking to this alien who has baby reptilians doing his construction work for him, who explained to him that humans should have never come out in space. And if they try it again, they're going to blow them up again. And the first time humans went into space, that whole left brain thing messed them up so bad that they actually had to blow up the planet because humans were going to come try to blow up Mars. They didn't really explain where the aliens live. But I see that theme so many times in science fiction. The aliens, once they get two or three humans comfortably close in their UFO or whatever, explaining that, you know, this is why we never went back, because you'd view us as monsters and you'd each other up and you would blow us up. And, you know, when the Atlantis conflict went down, which is never named by name in these films, the older civilizations that had greater power or whatever, you know, were knocked out by this brain business.
Well, I was going to say, that's sort of like the day the Earth stood still, and there's an interesting connection there because in the Watchmen comic, there, so in the Watchmen comic, Ozymandias plans on uniting the world through this false flag alien invasion, and then it happens. New York is completely obliterated. Everyone's dead, and I remember, and, like, throughout the comic, like, they place certain images throughout that I guess resonates with the story, and one of those is like posters for the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still, which is interesting. So, and of course, in that movie, they threaten humanity that, you know, if you don't unite, we're going to destroy you. So,
yeah.
Well, that's a perfect image, because the moon landing was, well, that was the first, or not one of the first. The first was, the first satellite broadcast was The Beatles' All You Need Is Love. But everyone knew about TV in 1969, and everyone knew that the Americans were going to land. So, you know, everyone stood still and turned their attention to the TV to watch that thing go down. It was the most advanced form of brainwashing you could ever have, because everyone was tuning their brain into the exact same projected image. I mean, it hints so closely to the Valis laser that it's almost absurd. That what would you need to stage, or what would you need to do to get everyone to look and receive the same message? I guess it's paralleled now towards the smartphones, and that everyone has an internet in their pocket, and that if something big does go down right now, not only will we be able to all watch it happen at the same time, but everyone will be communicating throughout the world at the same time at a level beyond anything that we've ever seen. And that's a conversation once it hits. I mean, the conversation never dies. Walls are just put up to conceal certain things. But once that big conversation starts, it's just never going to stop, you know? Because the only way to stop it would be to turn off the internet and to shut down those phones.
Okay, Bill. The first time that I ever actually seriously... basically, at this point, I don't believe that footage that we see of the moon is real. Not to say that I don't think we went to the moon, but I wouldn't make an authoritative statement that this is a fact, but the argument for Stanley Kubrick filming that shit is so strong. Like, all of that shit, you can always find the line of the back screen projection, like in like every fucking photograph and every fucking everything, and you can see how they slowed down the footage, you know, to give the appearance that they're like moving in like the slow motion footage, like all of that. Like, I don't buy it. That's not to say I don't buy that we went to the moon, but I think that that was a pre-recorded briefing made prior to our departure, you know.
Well, because they really didn't know what was up there. And if you broadcast to the entire world a true live shot of the moon and one of those guys gets attacked by a space dog, I mean, what do people on the streets do? It would be, everyone would devour themselves. I mean, or would we have some sort of resiliency and we'd be able to talk about it and say, well, was it a Christian space dog or a Jewish space dog? Was it a Muslim? Like, the people would lose their fucking
minds.
It
was a terrier. Space terror. That's why I would build the Star Wars system.
But I just don't know if they said, oh shit, we promised the world we're going to do this and we got to show it. We need a backup plan. Or they knew all along what they were doing. And
okay, yeah. Okay, you guys, you've seen Capricorn 1?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, O.J. Simpson. Okay, I don't know, man. That's weird. I mean, I saw it a long time ago, and I hadn't thought about it in so long, and it's Mars, that they faked the Mars mission, you know? But, like, I don't... Wow. I don't know.
Yeah, that movie really well, and there's a lot stuff that you could be wondering forever about these conspiracies, and you're watching the movie and it's like, oh, Cat just walked straight into the space shuttle across the thing we'd all see on the news, but it's too far away to actually see, and basically like put a gun in the cockpit or open the cockpit very forcefully and be like, yo, you know, we're gonna burn your family, you know, their planes right now if you don't get out and start listening to exactly what you are now, what the plan is now, whatever. It's very easy to screw someone over like that and start a conspiracy. And in that movie there's no thick, you know, literature about Trump-based mind control or anything like that. It's just they bring the guys in the room and they're like, this isn't the reality anymore, but we have to have the people believe that. If you have a problem with it, your families aren't going to be alive anymore. Questions, you know?
Right.
I want to mention that I talked to Mike Barra about a week ago. And when I say talk, just interview, whatever, but I was just asking him, you know, what would happen if you and Jay Widener and Richard Hogan like sat in one room and tried to figure this stuff out? And he said their heads would explode like in scanners. So that's worth it there. You guys familiar with Mike Barra?
I'm not.
He co-wrote the Dark Mission History of NASA book with Richard Hoagland.
I read a lot of Hoagland shit about that. And that was, it was a good read back then. I kind of fell out of touch with it, but I definitely know what you speak of there.
Yeah, Barra says the Widener is absolutely wrong something. Regardless of the fact that he said their heads would explode, I found a picture of them hugging. And then I don't know, they all just cover these different aspects of the secret space data. The Barra has written a book about structures on the moon and I believe psychic pets since.
Did you say psychic pets?
Yes, sir.
So are we talking Ghostbusters 2 now?
At cemeteries or what have you, I do not know.
No, what is it? Bill Murray is like the host of the show. It's like with the psychic.
Yeah. And it, also, the world was supposed to end February 14th. I forget what year, but he talks about the end of the world on that show.
Yeah, exactly. The one lady is the psychic pet lady, and the other guy, the end of the world guy, and he's like, "Come on, you're giving yourself a little more time. You at least want to make right. some royalties off that." And
yeah, the hardcover's not even going to be off for a year, and the world would have already ended.
So let me ask you. I mean, ultimately, you know, we have right now, I mean, we can make a joke about. You know, a Ghostbusters movie, but this is our reality now, is there are people, look at a guy like Pinchbeck, you know, he's made a fortune off telling people, check out this date, you just, you know, with enough advanced knowledge, you know, you do it, you know, 10 years in advance, you have plenty of time to sell books, and then as it gets closer, you sort of shift your story a little bit, and you know, you're not claiming it's a very specific event of like, okay, some sort of fire and stone comes out of the sky, but you know, you weave yourself that sort of leeway as to what it means. But I mean, this is a huge industry right now. I remember a few years ago, you could go into a bookstore, I don't know if it still is, but you go into a bookstore and there would be a whole section on 2012 stuff. In 2004 or 2005, I was approached by a publishing company asking me to write on 2012 phenomenon. And I said, would you write a book about 2012? And this was 2004. I was aware of some of this stuff, not a lot of it. Much more conspiracy then. So, you know, guys like Jay Widener, I think that's the first book I read. Widener's stuff was for this book, and then I'm working on this book, I'm doing all this research into different 2012 theories, and then the guy says to me in a meeting, he says, so listen, he's like, you need to, you know, he's like, you don't have to go too crazy the research, and this is after doing months and months of research, you have to go crazy the research, he goes, basically we just want you to say that the world's gonna end. I'm like, what? I'm like, I was like, I don't think I can say that. And he's like, no, no, no. And he said to me straight up, he said, we want to scare people into buying books.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I could do that. You know, it's like, so obviously I didn't. And yeah, you know, so Bill is saying, why is Time Zero get such little press? Yeah, I mean, because it's not scary. There's, you know, it's not scary. It actually seems to make a little bit of sense, and it goes over most people's heads. I don't know. It doesn't. I don't know if you can sell. It's why Sync. We've been very lucky with the Sync book, but you know, we're in a very small pond here. The average number of people are not trying to get into very heady concepts. They want, you know, little bite-sized nuggets of information. The world's going to end? Is it going to end or not? Is Jesus coming? You know, just let me know if the world's going to end, and I can deal with that. But don't try to tell me why or how, you know. Because if the world really, you know, this is what we're saying, if there is an actual danger of not, of worldwide destruction, but it comes from atomic war and all these terrible things, which you would have to actually do something to prevent. But most people who are the fundamentalist religious people, whether that's Islamic, Jewish, or Christian, they are very pro-war. So it's not like, oh, I just realized that there's a danger of the world ending due to atomic war or something like that. Maybe we chill out here. Maybe we should stop invading countries.
They're into it because it's so bad, you know?
Yeah.
They're not supposed to, you know? I'm not supposed to like this, so they do. It's anything you repress, you end up wanting more. So they don't want the world to end, but they do.
It's funny, so when you said about Dr. Strangelove being, you know, this sexual metaphor, it makes me wonder if, you know, all these people who have very repressed sexualities, that's their release. It's like, if you can't act, get off, then you need to drop a bomb on a country.
Yeah,
just to get a load of
violence is the next step. So after repression, so what you don't allow yourself in that realm, you take it's just that's how it works. It's like birth, growth, decay, and death, like none are separate from each other. They're distinct but not separate. And so you have this phenomenon where if one gets repressed, you take it out on another way, on another level, you know. But I would see it when I drove a cab all the time. It was like I'd be driving these guys around and talking about how they're going to get laid tonight. And then at the end of the night, I'd pick up the same people and they'd either have gotten in a fight or I see them get in a fight where they're just like, fuck you, motherfucker. And then one time they threw somebody on my cab and like we're beating the shit out of them on my hood while I'm like in front of the bar. I was just like, oh my God, dude. And I'm like, that's the guy who was talking about fucking pussy at the beginning of the ride. There we go.
That's our pussy man.
Is there a connection? You know, it seems pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Well, what's the dull deal with? Okay, so in Strangelove, they have these bombs, which is the ultimate orgasm, but they can't use them.
Right.
So. So you've built the most phallic object in the world, the biggest dick you can buy, to carry the most payload than any dick could ever carry, but you can't use them.
Right.
So the path of
like
violence...
It's like being Superman. It's like being Superman. Who's Superman gonna... He was always going up to Lois Lane, but he couldn't possibly fuck her. He'd rip her in two.
Right.
So, you know, so that's basically... That's the story right there. Yeah, you build the Uberman... This atomic phallus, but what do you do with it? It's a monster cock. You can't put that in anywhere.
Is there any...
It's like King Kong.
But so, okay, so that's the whole hot fusion, cold fusion thing, right? Is that the reaction in that technology is a hot fusion. It for the energy to be released, it causes heat. Heat so massive that it can be a bomb. And that's why nuclear reactors need water coolers, so that they can absorb all that heat that it's generating before it's translated into electricity.
Boiling water, basically, right? Yeah. I mean, that's what
if you could get cold fusion, right, which is the mythological holy grail of all energy science, then every home could have a box-sized generator that you could power your entire house's electricity with, you know, a cup of water for 25 years. Because you wouldn't have to have the infrastructure to deal with all the massive heat. But that's all mythology. That's all conspiracy. Anyone who claims to have discovered cold fusion is laughed off as a quack before they can even get to the television screen. So I don't know how many of you have pondered on the whole cold fusion question.
Well, there's even things like the guy who a few years ago developed this technology to use water as a fuel. They would burn water as a car fuel. And then the military came to his house, spoke to him, and he said, you know, he sold them the rights to whatever.
Yeah, he was a professor at Stanford, right? Is a Stanford professor, that guy? I think I know who you're talking about.
I don't remember the guy's name or position. I just remember, like, there was a few mainstream news stories about this guy and his development, and then very quickly it was like, oh, yeah, the military bought it.
Yeah.
And that was it. You can't have, $5 or $9 gas at the pump. You're using water.
I was watching this documentary on Elon Musk, which some of you may or may not be familiar with. In it, they had a guy who, he like his own shop, and he came up with his own way to refurbish cars and stuff so that they'd be energy efficient, wouldn't harm the earth. And he just sent his wife with a trailer, and then you could tell all of his money was in this like garage in the back where he just took people's cars one by one and made them, you know, this way I'm saying he figured out. And then during the documentary, I guess it's like he came to them documenting his life as well as Elon Musk. Like his entire garage is blown down. The police records say that it's obviously an arson, whatever. Lost most of the tech that he could to refigure out his whole process of going to cars. Meanwhile, Elon Musk, he seem to have enough money to just try anything. And if the military or the money or whatever shuts him down, he just switches over to something else. Then I think we can have hope in those Stark types that maybe aren't as deep in the info as we are, but they're moving around the corporate world and trying to make those kind of changes. Maybe we can't trust them. I don't know. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The economic pressure valve that unlimited energy would give the world would make the military-industrial complex completely collapse.
Yeah.
Because whoever could offer that to people, if you didn't have to pay for heat, electricity, or fuel for your machines or your cars, if you didn't have to have any budget, any economic resources for that because it was limitless and free, well then shit, what, I mean, you would collapse reality into a more perfect moment, you know? You could, it would be just enough of a push to completely dissolve the shackles, I think, of living within an economic grid. The problem is that, you know, are the people ready for that? That to me seems to be the conspiratorial crux, is that are the people ready for that? It's like the whole flying car thing. Is there a flying car? Does it exist? Of course it does. Do you want some of the people you see on the street driving a flying car? I don't think so.
God, no.
So
yeah.
Is there free, limitless energy? Possibly. It's hinted at. Are you ready to see a world where all of that stuff is accessible and free? I don't know. Maybe.
Free energy would be a bomb that could destroy the Earth.
There'd be so many long-term changes you'd have to get down right off the bat. Like, what can we do with all these workers who do work for car companies, who don't want to hear shit about chopping down trees and the environment? It's just that's their job. That's how they take their money home. And how can we just remake those factories and stuff into following environmentalists? And some of them are, admittedly, you know, that you hear is, oh, well, if the environmentalists got out your way, imagine how many people would be out of jobs in the country then. You know, I don't know how to answer that, but it's something we have to figure out before it's Fifth Element and everybody's flying.
Well, that's the thing, right? That's the whole Atlas Shrugged thing, the whole Ayn Rand thing, is that John Galt has figured it out. He's got the key, but there's nowhere to put it. And instead of, I mean, that is a crossroads that only a few certain people will ever in reality face. I mean, we all face it on differing levels of differing powers, but to really have solved a riddle like that and have the solution, but recognizing, you know, wow, I can't save everybody because they don't know how to be saved or the world isn't ready to be saved. That's a mind fuck. And you know, that's a novel that just puts it all out there explicitly and rather perfectly. And there's a wave of just shit that's thrown onto that book lately. And I kind of feel as if people do that from a position.
Hey, William?
People do that from,
William?
Yeah.
I just want to do you a service, man. I'm literally hearing out of every three words. I fucked something up. I got to add contacts here, but I think we might want to recall or something.
All right.